I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, we are back for episode 123 of Digital Divination.
Oh, that's nice. You know, yeah. Hey, every time we get together like this, I feel, you know, compelled to say how much I love doing this with you guys, and how also I'm an employee of the Wizards of the Coast, and my opinion or mine are not theirs.
Great.
And I'm really thankful for that as well.
Yes, yeah. We're all thankful.
Well, tis the season for thankfulness.
Yes. As a matter of fact, since we are recording in the future, happy Thanksgiving to y'all.
Are we recording in the past? Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, we're recording in the past, John.
In the past, for the future. But
yes.
That's right.
Yeah. As of today, when this gets out, it'll be Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving to you. American Thanksgiving, by the way.
Oh,
well, happy American Thanksgiving.
Yeah, the Canadians, I think, had theirs in October this year. It was really
crazy. We were up in Canada when it was like the big holiday, and we're like, "What holiday?" They're like, Thanksgiving. I'm like, it's not I'm just going to be quiet because I'm the outsider here, and I realized that Canadian Thanksgiving was when we were there.
Nice.
Did they have a Black Friday or anything after it, or was there anything?
I hear Canadian.
I
hear that the Canada the day after Canadian Thanksgiving is called Nice Friday, where everyone is just extra polite to each other.
Wow,
that's hard to distinguish from the other days when we were in Canada.
I know. Okay, yeah, we'll try really hard not to alienate any of our Canadian listeners.
So if either of you are listening now,
so Ryan, if you're listening, we apologize.
Oh, he will listen.
Yeah, I know he will.
That's right. Okay. All right. So, we were talking a little bit beforehand. And I think last year it was just Ron and I, and we discussed what kind of Thanksgiving kind of stuff. And I think now I'm off track for where because I was going to get into what we were going to talk about, but talk about what we're going to do for
what
Thanksgiving.
What we're going to do, and then we'll get into something. We promise it'll be sci-fi related by the time we get to the end here.
Okay. Yes, let's do that. Jason has something fun to do.
I guess I'll talk about what I'm going to do because it's hopefully going to be fun. I've been volunteering sort of on a weekly basis at the animal shelter nearish me. It's about 15-minute drive, but it's the animal shelter for the area, and I usually do it every like Saturday morning. I go and I spend about 2 hours walking the dogs, and maybe if there's time, hanging out with the dogs and taking them to a yard to jump around and stuff like that. It's been very great, fulfilling. I've got to the point where I work with the slightly more reactive dogs, slightly more shy or fearful or aggressive dogs. It was a whole training I had to do. It's been great. I was just there last night. The first time I've done it in a while, late afternoon when it got dark when it gets dark at like 5 o'clock, and I was there until six, and it's just like, I'll take the dog out. No, this path behind the shelter is not very well lit. So it got a little spooky there at the end. This week, I'm going to go in Thursday morning. I'm going to do one of my 2 hour shifts, walk them in the morning. And then I'm going to, basically take a dog home with me, for the night, just for the rest of the day and for the until the next morning. They encourage this sort of thing to sort of like, it's like overnight fostering basically, and to get the dog out of the shelter, gets them maybe some socialization with other people and an environment that's not as scary for them, not as stressful. There's not a bunch of other dogs there, that kind of stuff. And so it's sort of a weird, like, when they told me about this when I was like, went to like the volunteer orientation, I was like, okay, what? This is a dog library? I don't understand how this is supposed to work. Yeah. Like, I could just grab a dog and leave with it? Like, no, there's a whole procedure. You know, I've got to sign waivers and stuff like that.
Right.
And,
you can't have it overdue or there's a fine.
They'll probably come after me. Because, you know, the dog is with me and not getting seen by the public, they're not getting adopted. That's the thing. So they usually they persuade you to do this on a day in which the shelter is closed to the public, which is like usually Mondays. But the shelter is also going to be, I think, closed to the public on Thanksgiving, and so might as well do that. Otherwise, they're going to be in there, kind of like, you know, the volunteers will still be there and the staff will still be there, but you know, might as well take them out, get them here. Maybe we'll get them some chicken or some turkey from the supermarket and let them feast on that.
Really spoil them.
Spoil them up a bit. I don't know what the other thing is. I don't even know which dog I'm going to take yet.
That's what I was going to ask. Because if you were there last night and it's only a couple days, you already have one picked out? Are you?
I have a thought about one. Like, there's one that I walked. It was very sweet and very nice. And but, you know, that's 4 days away from currently now. And he could get adopted by then. Right, like the shelter be. I mean, I guess the shelter's not open on Monday, so it'll only be like two days. But there's, you know, whatever, and there might be another dog that needs it a little more. You know,
Well, hopefully he gets adopted by then, right? I mean, it'd be great.
I mean, hopefully, I mean, that would be great. Yeah, if that happens, that's great. But otherwise, he's just a I can't even remember what he's like. I think he's some kind of mixed breed. He's just this black and white dog called Oreo. And I'll show you all a picture that I have of him when this is over.
Nice. Awesome. I'm carrying forward the library analogy, though. I'm like, you know, you could hold on to them for a couple days if you reshelve them in the wrong section and then go back and find them again.
Oh, no. Yeah, can't put them in the wrong kennel. They'll see.
Oh, no. Bad idea. There's probably training against that.
Yeah. But there's all sorts of dogs that I've been walking that have been really sweet and special that have kind of been there for a little bit longer than other dogs. The little dogs there get sort of snatched up pretty fast. It's the sort of larger huskies and pit bulls and stuff like that that take a little while longer to get adopted, which is a shame, but they're all pretty great generally.
My Thanksgiving story also involves a husky, if I can insert myself here. We've got relatives that live, about two and a half hours away that we're going to go see on Thanksgiving. But my wife was just down there just last weekend. She went with another friend. It was a really good visit, just them. I stayed here with the kids. But she texted me and said, oh, you know that, you know, my cousin's wife is going to be giving birth in just a couple weeks, like first part of December. They want to know if we can take their husky. When I come back, I'm coming back with their husky. And I'm like, oh, well, that I'm assuming that that's going to be one less, you know, the sometimes demanding animal for them to take care of, because there's a very high energy, you know, this husky in particular is very high energy, needs lots of walks. So sure. And then, so she comes home with this husky that stayed over at our place before. So this husky kind of knows our dogs and kind of knows the place. And so I asked my wife, I'm like, oh, how long are we keeping this husky for? And she's like, I don't know. I didn't ask. I'm like, is it forever? Is this our dog now? I don't know. She's like, no, I don't think so. And she was not very clear at all. It turns out we're going down to the same family for Thanksgiving. We're going to leave the husky here. But over the Thanksgiving table is the perfect opportunity for me to say, when, if ever, should we bring your husky back? Because right now, I don't know. Maybe it's going to be with us through the end of the year. Maybe a month or so past that. I just don't know. But I'll find out on Thanksgiving when we have the husky talk over the Thanksgiving table.
Yeah. I can't relate this to any library analogy. This is like if the library left a book in your house and then didn't try to get it back.
This is interlibrary loan is what it sounds like.
It is an interlibrary
like.
Loan. Yeah. Interlibrary That's loan. Great. Thank you, John, for making
you
that
did
connection.
It. You did it.
So,
How about you, John? What are you doing?
Well, this will be one of the first years in probably, maybe 10 or 15 years that we're not hosting Thanksgiving at our house. So we moved over the summer, and now we're further away from everybody. And so longer drive, not 2.5 hour drive, but longer drive for a lot of folks. But more importantly, we have all our furniture in our main living area in our garage, and we have painters in there that have covered like all the floor and like a lot of the services with material, and they've been patching holes and retexturing. And starting tomorrow, Monday, they're going to be spraying all our trim. And then on Tuesday, they're going to be painting the ceiling, I think. And then Wednesday, hopefully the walls. But they're not going to be done then. That this is just like the kitchen and living room. They still have the hallway, the bedroom, and the bathroom. So it is pretty much uninhabitable. So that's why I'm here now. I'm at our secondary location in Kamehameha Island. So we're going to go to Kitsap County to visit my sister-in-law for Thanksgiving. And it's actually going to be kind of nice because you're not spending, like usually Thanksgiving, a couple of days before, we're spending a lot of time prepping and cooking, and the day of, it's like all cooking and stuff. And so it'll be nice for the first time in like a dozen years to like be a guest at somebody else's house for it. The only downside is that, and I was kind of talking to some folks here, is that for the last 4 or 5 years, one of our friends has been coming to our house for Thanksgiving, and now I can't invite him to where we're going. So it's like, hopefully he's got somebody else to this is Scott, Jason.
Yeah, no, you said.
I mentioned earlier. It before. So
I'd invite him here if we weren't getting in the car and going 2.5 hours.
Yeah, away. That's why I asked that. You know, I'm trying to knock around. But so that's kind of the plan. Now, we do have a situation with our dog, and to bring this back to the dog thing, and he's a little older. And when we were in Bothell, we had a kennel that connected from our garage to the outside, and that's typically where we'd leave him for, you know, if we had to go for Thanksgiving and whatnot. And he likes his kennel a lot because that's where he gets his treats and it's warm. But we don't have a kennel here now. And my sister-in-law, I don't know, I didn't realize that people like this existed in the world, but my sister-in-law doesn't want a dog in her house. Can you imagine?
No. Yeah.
What?
I know. So I think what we're going to do, because our house has got all the floors, everything covered, and we have a doggy door, and it's got heat because they have to keep heat on while they're painting. They're going to be done painting all those areas. I think we're just going to leave him in the house with his bed and water and treats, and he can go out the doggy door, which we've been training him to do, to do his business. But we haven't left him, you know, since like the pandemic. We haven't really left him for a long period for a super long time. He generally goes everywhere with us, and I don't want to bring him down there and basically leave him in the car while we're doing Thanksgiving. It's kind of you know. So that's kind of the angsty thing that I'm kind of dealing with dog wise. He's an old dog, and he generally sleeps waiting for us to come back, so it's not a huge deal. But you know, that's the Thanksgiving dog story I have, and I don't know how that ties to any library at all. So.
Ooh,
maybe it's a personal library. Yeah,
yeah. This is one of those those lending those little mini lending libraries.
The ones that sit in the little box out front.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. And he's getting kind of old too. Well, I mean, like, you know, Ron had an issue with one of his dogs just today, an elderly dog.
Yeah. I was going to not be here because my daughter called up when we were away gaming. My wife and I are both away gaming. And she's like our little dog who's very old, 15 or 16, something like that. We're not exactly sure how she was. Like, her jaw was. Wouldn't close, and it was sort of sitting funny, and she was had blood all over in her mouth, and I go, it sounds, and she was wheezing, like, this sounds terrible. So we hurried home, and we're asking some questions and doing a little bit of research, you know, while I'm driving, my wife's doing some of the research, see what's going on. And it we settled by the time we got home on pretty clearly like a fractured tooth, probably.
Okay.
And that seems to be the case. The problem is, as a very old dog, she doesn't have very many teeth anyway. And so we give her nice soft food, but she sees the other much younger, bigger dog get kibble. And so our old dog thinks kibble is like a treat and that we're treating the other dog. So she really wants kibble, even though she can't really chew it, and she can chew it even less now. So anyway, we're going to have to get her tooth looked at and make sure that's tended to. And in the meantime, she's going to have to deal with the soft food. But
poor baby.
Oh yeah. So, anyway, So those that's our dog related Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Thank you for coming to our dog finder episode, everybody.
Dog finder. We're not supposed to be talking about dogs on Thanksgiving, though. In America, at least, we talk about turkeys. We talk turkey at Thanksgiving. And where I was getting started is, like, last year, Ron and I discussed a turkey playable race in Starfinder 1. Well, you know, that's Starfinder 1. That's the old system now.
That's so last year.
Yeah. Last year, yes. So we're going to talk turkey about something else instead. For Starfinder 2nd edition.
Let's do it.
Okay. What should it be?
I don't know. I had a vague idea of doing, like, I was thinking, but, you know, thinking about Thanksgiving and thinking a little bit about, like, how there are very few successful Thanksgiving themed horror movies. Like, you don't do the creatures. There's Thanksgiving, which has a ridiculous killer turkey. And it's there's the recent Eli Roth movie, just I think called Thanksgiving, which has a killer Puritan.
That's actually that pretty recent, even though it was it was built up from a fake trailer in like the Grand House movies years ago. They finally made a movie out of it.
They've made the weirdly like two or three movies out of the fake trailers in that grindhouse flick. I'm sure there's at least one other one that doesn't, you know, isn't probably not very good, nothing very memorable, but, you know, with the problem being maybe that this needs maybe something of a sci-fi bent to it. Maybe we need some sort of turkey-ish or Thanksgiving based creature, monster, alien to threaten people, you know, to base the movie around.
Oh, a turkey monster. A monstrous turkey?
A monstrous turkey. Not just a monstrous turkey. So let's sci-fi it up. Let's Starfinder it up a little bit and come up with something that is a, I don't know, is it a turkey crossed with some sort of drake? Is that too fantastic? Is it turkey plus some sort of like xenomorph situation? Is it turkey and the swarm, right?
Oh, a swarm of turkeys. That would be
not
bad.
A turkey and the swarm. Well, you could have a swarm of turkeys.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about like the swarm creatures or something like that.
I do think whatever we've got, it ought to be an intelligent turkey monster, right? Sapient at least, but intelligent at best. That's now wants vengeance for all the turkey farming that's been done. Okay. And even if turkeys are, you know, not strict biological kin to this this turkey monster, I mean, they're just mad as hell about all the turkey eating, and they're gonna make all the other species pay for their for their turkey eating ways.
And it should have a natural ability to put enemies asleep.
Oh, a tryptophan style ability. Yes. You don't have to eat them though, right?
Disgorges tryptophan and a cone.
It can be a spell casting turkey.
Yeah.
Do we want it to be magic? Do we want it to be
sci-fi?
More sci-fi. Like, I mean, it could be bad. It could be both, right? It could be sci-fantasy, right?
That's true.
But do we want to throw in all that magic, or is this just the perfect turkey killing machine, not turkey killing machine, but perfect turkey killing hyphen machine.
Yeah. That's right. The two words that I think come together here that I would like to incorporate some way is like a giblet cannon that it uses. Which implies that at least some sort of, you know, high tech, maybe some sort of cyber giblet cannon.
Turkey. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking, you know, turkeys are probably related to or have evolved somehow from a dinosaur of sorts. And so maybe they're some sort of raptor turkey, you know?
Oh, I do like that. That's ferocious. And dinosaurs can be really big. This could be a really big turkey cyber sleep-inducing monster.
a roar, or like maybe said some sort of gas that sort of puts you sleeping. All right, so let's maybe start thinking about numbers. Let's think about that, and then we can start throwing all sorts of other things in there.
Starfinder 2nd edition. Want our turkey?
Exactly. What level is this turkey creature? I mean, I always want to throw things that be around five just so that we can have them in the sort of lower levels. But that doesn't necessarily be super ferocious. We can go maybe up to seven.
Or we could do something like a, you know, a one type of creature and then the better sort of version of the creature.
Oh, yeah. The elite in the same turkey.
Spread.
Turkey.
Yeah. Thing. So if we do like a seven, like you say, like a seven and then like a 13.
Yeah. Okay. For the elder turkey.
Right.
Right. Yes.
Okay. Great. Yes. All right.
Turkey sovereign, you know.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, so that number, just throwing put a seven on there, we can just throw in a whole bunch of numbers really quick, right? Since mm-hmm. this is, you know, based on Pathfinder's Edition, we already know things like, oh, it's probably got an AC of around 24. Mm-hmm. We can give it maybe about 120, 130 hit points. Mm-hmm. And we can talk about, do you want to think about this thing got a good perception or just a sort of a medium one?
Hmm.
Is it good? I mean, turkeys are sort of well known for not being like super like with it. You know what I mean? They're supposedly very stupid. So, okay. We'll do moderate. We'll do moderate for the perception slash initiative at about 15. And then we can throw in saves around those numbers as well. Maybe good reflex or good fortitude.
Good fortitude. Tough turkey.
Yeah. You don't like it. People don't want a tough turkey on Thanksgiving, but this tough turkey is coming for you.
Low will saves, though, on this thing.
Definitely. We'll put plus 12 will, let's say plus 14 reflex, plus 18 fortitude save.
I like it.
I
don't know if anybody out there is writing this down. Please do. And we can kind of throw in some, if we want to do the stat, you know, the attribute modifiers. Probably what we're talking like strength and con are probably are pretty high. Or do you want to do we're gonna have a cannon, but this will be they'll be like a soldier style cannon, meaning more that's gonna be more like an area effect than a sort of a precision situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we can put the dex a little lower. Maybe put the dex strength of 6, con of 4, dex of 2,
right, intelligent the wisdom. Yeah,
the modifiers plus. Modifiers, we're talking like you know, maybe plus 0 int, minus 1 wisdom, plus 0 charisma. Just sort of make those nothing. We don't really need to worry about that.
Okay, so so we've already said not spellcaster by putting that plus 1, or plus 0, minus 1, plus 0.
Well, yeah, kind of. I think we can do, I mean, it doesn't mean that we can't base, the DC doesn't have to be based on those two, whatever
that's a good point. Yeah.
Sleep is. Yeah. It can be, you know, it can be the number that it needs to be. It'll probably be around 22, 25 or something like that.
But I think rather than spell casting this sleep effect, I think if it somehow exuded it from some orifice on its body, it would be very interesting.
Some sort of breath weapon, maybe.
Let's talk about this.
If you want to go breath weapon, yeah.
Well, let's talk about this. If we're going to sort of a cyber situation, right? Yeah. All of these abilities could all be sort of almost equipment based. They don't have to be intuitively. Maybe it's got something that it's got that it's one physical thing. It's got good the beak or something that it can have a sort of a beak attack. But the giblet cannon and the sort of sleep gas could all be items essentially, right? You know,
So it's a cyborg. Cyborg.
Yeah, so it comes out of its body too, but it has a valve in its neck and it just shoots out. It's not quite a breath weapon, but it has this sort of sci-fi bent to it, right?
Yeah.
Then we just say, let's talk about, do we want it to have just natural attacks for its melee attacks, or just do you want to give it also like a sword? Or a bat,
I think the beak is kind of scary on a bird that big, right?
And the claws too.
Dinosaur related.
Oh yeah, and dinosaur claws.
Agile claws, maybe.
Yeah.
Yes, right? Let's give it some agile claws. Probably we could say that's a. Well, let's go high on those. Let's go plus 18 for the attack rolls.
Wow, nice
on the beak and the claws. The claws will be agile. We'll just make them do a little bit less damage.
Ooh, will it get a multi attack?
Here's something.
Actions.
It could take multiple actions, right? Okay. So here's something we can do. I mean, you could go move towards something, you know, like Draconic Frenzy, which has 2 actions. It does 3 attacks. So we could do something like that. Let's do something fun though that it can do with the claws and the beak and some sort of combination thing.
Oh, like a grab or something.
Why don't we say we give the claws agile? We give it grab, right? Meaning we got to give it a good athletic score, and we'll throw that up at about plus 17 for that. And then we give it a peck. It's got a beak attack, normal beak attack, right? But it's got this thing, it's got a one action ability called peck. or pecked to death or something like that, or a bloody peck or something like that. And the requirements are, has an animal, has a creature grabbed with its claws. Mm-hmm. And so it does that. When it does that, it has you grabbing its claws, and then it just pecks you. And it does, we'll say for one action, grab, it needs to be grabbed. And it's either maybe could make two peck attacks against you, or it's a peck attack that throws on bleed, persistent bleed.
I love the idea of peck attack that does bleed damage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if somebody's grabbed, it's really hard for their friends to kind of get in there to stop the bleed, and it becomes really dangerous. Yeah, I like the way that
this goes. Is sort of like, this is almost like Rend, but not, but a little mm-hmm. different. We'll make it a little more like it just sort of pecks into you, right? If it's got you grabbed and rips out your giblets, rips out your jugular.
That's right.
And really just sort of carves you up, right?
Don't say carve.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something, another ability we could give it, carving ability.
I want to step back now that we're thinking about sort of the action routines that the creature can take. Maybe this like tryptophan gas that it emits isn't an action, but a reaction. If somebody next to it kind of hits it, like it splits some tech thing and puts out some tryptophan gas to put the adjacent creatures to sleep or something like that.
That. Okay, great. That's good. We'll do that. We'll give it that reaction. Snoozy time reaction. And it's say struck with a melee attack, right? That'll be the trigger.
That's right.
Should it be have to be adjacent to the creature? Can it be if someone hits you even from like with a reach weapon 10 feet away with a melee attack?
I like rewarding people that use reach weapons and make them feel good about, oh, I'm using the right weapon in this circumstance. Yeah, because if the creature's got somebody grabbed, maybe the tryptophan gas gets, everything adjacent to it. So if you got a reach weapon, you're not going to do it. But if it got somebody grabbed, you might put them to sleep right in its claw. That's bad news.
It's not great. Yeah. Okay. I am sorry. With something we didn't talk about right off the bat. We were talking about this being a big creature. I'm picturing this large. I don't know about y'all.
Yeah. Well, even the seventh level, you think is large?
The seventh level is large, and I think maybe
the sovereign huge.
Like 13. Yeah.
Or with gargantuan. Come on.
Big.
All right. I like your thinking. I like your moxie.
When it's going to be that big, I'm almost picturing it to be almost a super evolved.
Yes. Yes.
Killing machine version. It isn't just all the numbers a little higher. It's got something else. But
the seventh level.
Let's finish this one first. Reaction. Once we're around, it's just going to. I mean, just think about that. If it gets everybody all the time, once we're around, it's always going to be doing that.
So
unless people are shooting. Although Starfinder is more of a ranged meta, right? So people are going to be shooting.
Starfinder second edition, especially, yeah.
Second edition, exactly, yeah. So we'll just say, reaction struck with an adjacent creature strikes it with a melee weapon or a melee attack. Doesn't have to be a weapon. It could be a natural attack. A canister bursts in its cyber body and sprays this gas in a 5-foot emanation around the creature. Everyone has to make a fortitude save. Let's give it 20 DC 25 since it's
I think almost like it has blister packs set in its armor.
That bursts out we could go crazy and say this can only happen 4 times in a fight, but that's 4 rounds, and the fight's only going to last 4 rounds anyway.
You might as well make it make it infinite.
But if it's as a reaction, then it's only going to happen like once per round at most.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. It's only going to happen. So everyone make that save. What do we think? Is it full on like you fail the save, you kind of go a bit unconscious, or is it slowed,
let's look at like Cockatrice and Basilisk in Pathfinder second edition, where you're slowed initially, but if it if it's affected by it when you're already slowed, then you're unconscious.
Do we want to do, I think there's a situation where you get like have to get up to slowed 3, and when you have no actions because you're slowed 3, you are fully petrified. But that is more or less because the cockatrice is kind of maybe attacking you multiple times, right? Mm-hmm. And able to sort of pile this on. It's not going to happen, I think, just from the reaction. So, yeah. So we can say...
And petrified is way worse than unconscious. If this is just putting somebody unconscious, then their friends can get them kind of back in, maybe.
Yeah. There's that. I mean, there's like the sleep spell basically does say, in general, it's like you're... even on a failure, you kind of fall asleep standing up a little bit, but the critical failures, you kind of do fall prone and drop all your stuff like you would normally go unconscious. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we'll say, but the thing is about slowed is that on your turn, you kind of get rid of it, right? Mm-hmm. You can't be, again, you're not going to necessarily be slowed twice by this.
Right. I see what you mean. Right. I see what you mean.
You know, because it's just a reaction.
No. You, yeah, you got a good point there. So a couple of things I'm thinking of, and neither of them are good, but I think this is probably instructive to show sort of the thinking of monster design. Maybe one of the other creatures' attacks also slows. Maybe instead of the beak, I like it doing bleed, not slowing, but that's a thing you could see. The beak could also slow, or it could have something like an aura that slows people when they get in. And this one is, this reactive thing could kind of compound the slow on top of that.
I'm actually sort of leaning towards taking it out of the reaction and just making it an aura. You're near this thing. It's kind of pumping, constantly pumping out this tryptophan style gas.
I like that. I like it.
Mm-hmm. And that if you start, every time you start that you're, although auras usually happen at the start of your turn. Ooh, slowed would only, the way that things sort of proc, they sort of go through doesn't quite work this way. Mm-hmm. So you could say that it's just like you are, clumsy and have a penalty to speed is also kind of like, I'm a little bit sleepy.
Mm-hmm.
We don't necessarily have to go with slowed and whatnot. So, I would maybe go with that. Say, it's a sleep inducing kind of, gas around it, maybe 20 feet. It's constantly piping out. You enter or start your turn there. You got to make the fortitude save. If you fail the fortitude save, you're a clumsy one and take a, let's say, -5 penalty, right. Foot penalty to your speed. Nothing great, but
they stack up.
But they stack up, exactly. Right. So if you're already clumsy, and the next round you do it, you get a clumsy 2, 10-foot mm-hmm. penalty, maybe, or double that on a critical failure
right.
situation.
Well, then we have to say, right? We have to make sure our numbers say that this is to a maximum of clumsy 4 and a speed reduction of 20 feet or something like that. We'd have
yes, exactly. And you could even put a little rider on there. It's like, yeah, anyone ever gets to clumsy 4, they fall unconscious.
I like that one.
Right then and there. Yep. I think it's probably not going to happen. And all that's going to going to penalize people is that they're going to fall down, drop whatever they're holding, and then the nearest noise is going to wake them up, basically.
Right, and that's 4 rounds though, too. I mean,
well, only if you critical fail twice.
Oh yeah, that's true.
You're out. That's good. So I think that's sort of like it's fun to sort of do the critical the fail stuff.
I also like how this plays into the creature's strengths because if you've got somebody who is adjacent or near the creature, at least getting clumsy, they're easier to just snatch up and grab and start pecking.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Exactly. And then let's just sort of say the Giblet Cannon, what does it do? It's a sort of integrated weapon and one of its wing arms. We could also, I just want to think about this real quick. Do I want to give this thing a fly speed of any kind?
No. Super clumsy? Because it is canonically important that a character believe that the turkey can fly, but it cannot.
Yes, especially for battles on the top of tall buildings.
Should we give this thing a weakness to cold then?
Yes.
So they can be easily frozen?
Turkeys. Yep.
Yeah.
I think so.
Okay, well, we'll give it a little weakness of cold. Just a minimum, 5 points, whatever. But the Giblet Cannon, blam, it is it's its main sort of ranged attack. We'll give it a sort of an area effect situation. Maybe, I can't quite remember in Star Fighter 2nd Edition if area fire is 2 actions or 1, but whatever it needs to be, it'll be that. It'll either be sort of a literal range. No, area fire is going to be DC, so it's not going to have a ranged line plus this. It'll be just sort of like Giblet burst,
a special attack that it does. Yeah. Right.
What's it actually going to fire?
Integrated Giblet cannon.
Yeah,
it's not going to fire giblets, is it?
Yeah,
I like
why
that.
Not?
Just chunks of goo, chunks of gore.
Okay,
chunks of its previous victims.
Okay, I like that. That'll work.
Its own giblets, but chunks of its.
That's right.
Or maybe we put something
in giblets, right?
Well, maybe we put something in the lore that this, since these creatures are cyber in some way, that sometimes the surgeries fail, and that it's the height of honor of their society or whatever that even if you die, you're providing ammo for your fellow.
I like previous victims better.
Okay, previous victims.
Let's do that. Yeah.
Um,
So I have limited uses then because of that, probably.
Well, yeah, I mean, it'll be enough for the fight.
Yeah.
10-foot burst, maybe.
I like that.
Of cannons. Put some damage in there.
That's a pretty big range, yeah.
It is, but it teaches people to kind of spread out, right?
Yeah.
If this terrifying creature is stalking you through a building when you have to cluster up because the rooms aren't very big, that's even scarier.
Exactly. What are these gibbets? Do these gibbets do anything besides sort of damage you? Are they acid damage, or are they just sort of like bludgeoning damage with some grease effect, essentially?
And difficult terrain in the area.
Yeah.
Because they're slippery.
Yeah, well, grease effect and
stuff. Yeah, we could do a thing where, like, if it creates an area, and if you can tiptoe through it, right? I think grease is like you can walk slowly through it. But if you move faster, you have a chance of falling down. Oh. And the people who get a direct hit get automatically a chance to fall down, right?
Yeah.
So it's we could just do a lot of things. It's the reflex save, right? For getting gibbeted burst, you take 2d6 bludgeoning damage and 2d6 acid damage, and if you fail the save, you fall prone.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. Yep.
Yeah.
Because you're getting slipped down. If you critically fail,
that way we don't need to track difficult terrain. We can just say if you critically fail, you also fall prone.
Yeah. I mean, we could have these spots on there if we really want to get it complicated.
This is a lot for a 7th level or CR7.
No, it's not. I don't think so.
An aura and a ranged attack in addition.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we're all right.
Yeah. Aura, ranged attack, and then peck to death and, you know, grab on the claw, and then you're done. You don't have to do anything else. I think that should be enough. Yeah. You want to give the creatures sort of like you were
some
talking
options,
about, Ron, sort of
yeah.
insight. Yeah, give them some insights. Should have some range. Some melee should have something fun to do. Something like you said, a sort of a routine that you think it's going to do when it gets into a fight, right?
And a routine that kind of shows itself or helps itself. If you have somebody who's looking at it, who's maybe doesn't know all the ins and outs of monsters, but they kind of accidentally fall into the routine, that's great, right? Oh, yeah. I shoot this thing and I've knocked people prone, and then I'm going to move up and try to snatch up with one of my claws. Oh, hey, you happen to be prone. You happen to be clumsy because you're in my aura or whatever, right? It all kinds of plays into itself. That's good.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty tough. Yeah. We didn't sort of give the numbers for what kind of damages it does, but you get the idea. 2D something.
Right, 2D8. On the claws, maybe 2d4 on the peck plus the
2d8 plus 9 on the claw, on the beak, on the peck, and 2d6
plus 9 on the
2d6 plus 9 on the agile claw,
yeah,
something like that.
Right,
cool.
So if we scale this up to 13,
you have to go through all the other numbers, but you know, you get the idea, everything's going to go up 30, you know, 30.
Yeah, huge, I think, is more appropriate at just 13. If it were like 19 or more, then we could do the gargantuan.
Yeah, fair enough. We'll keep it huge. Yeah.
Well, and now what kind of, when we think about the higher level, I mean, the easy answer is this is just a more cybered up killing machine version. But sometimes the higher level thing is actually like a smarter leader type of the others. So maybe this is some sort of, you know, turkey or a leader or oracle or, you know, some sort of, they would still have a little bit of cyberware. They might still have the same kind of canon, you know, you might say, but maybe they've got some sort of, you know, something more that seems more overtly mystical about it, in addition to having kind of bigger numbers. Mm-hmm. And maybe this overtly mystical thing comes with having a higher intelligence, wisdom, or charisma instead of the...
And some spell-like effects or actual spells?
Well, I don't know. What kind of thing? I mean, turkeys do bring people together. So maybe some sort of ability to sort of drag your opponents together, right? Oh, some sort of mystically pull people either closer to you or closer to a group. Gravity. That goes well with the firing a radius of a giblet cannon.
Mm-hmm. Right. Also, and again, I don't have this particularly memorized, but we can look at the Solarian's kind of like black hole
supernova
type ability, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and then just sort of be like, it's got, and maybe it's not necessarily like mystical in the sense of spellcasting, but maybe this higher level thing is in tune with the forces of the cosmos. So it has this sort of ability that force-like ability to be like, and then everyone in a let's say make it huge, make a 40-foot burst has to make a fortitude save or get pulled towards the center of the burst.
Well, and I think it needs to be able to swallow whole.
Oh, sure. Why
and
not?
So yes. I think this burst actually is more like a tractor beam.
Oh, it pulls it in closer.
Pulls
as well.
It into you.
Yes.
Mm. And if it's, and I think it is a crime unless its swallow hole ability is called anything other than gobble gobble.
Yes. Yes, of course. It can be, this ability be where it opens its maw and sort of sucks people in, or is it pulling people in?
I think that's better. I think that's more thematic.
Normally
with a swallow hole, you need to make sure that its mouth, a jaw, beak attack has the ability to do grab.
Right.
Otherwise they'll have to. The economy doesn't work as well if you have to do it normally. So you would put improved grab or grab on the beak as well. We could also do a situation where change up the peck to death a little bit and be a thing where it instead of maybe doing peck with bleed or maybe it doesn't damage you at all. Maybe it just goes from when you grabbed in its claw, it just goes up, it throws you up in the air, opens its mouth, swallows you. Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking that instead of the bleed, it had that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it could. Either way, or we could, do we want to have it try to be able to like gobble multiple creatures simultaneously? Because we could say that when it does a sort of that breathe in ability, anyone who's kind of ends up being pulled, ends up being in the turkey space, mm-hmm. gets essentially affected by a swallow hole.
See, my initial thought is, that feels really powerful, but we are at level 13 here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, exactly. I mean, it's not going to be automatic, right? Well, you have to be able to, like, say everyone makes the fortitude save against the inhaling, and then they're moved closer, and then you say, like, if anyone who is basically ends up either adjacent or would be able to be moved into the creature space is automatically swallowed.
Right, because not all of them.
Exactly. So it's not going to be, but then you also have to put a limit on, like, it's...
It could be up to two creatures or something, maybe.
Up to two creatures of a certain size, right? Because there's a certain amount of, like, you can only... Oftentimes, you put it on a swallow hole, it's medium or lower or whatever on a huge creature. So,
Right.
I think that if you've got some forced movement towards the creature... And if it's far enough out, then if they fail the save, the only scary thing that happens is you get like scooted a little bit closer. But then you can try to run away as best you can with a tryptophan aura slowing you, right? But if you critically fail, or you start out really close to the creature, then you're right next to it, which means in you go.
Well, here's two things we do. We could do the gobble gobble be a three action activity. That's what it does. It's shoom, bloop, glump, you're inside if you fail. Mm-hmm. And then say, if it has anybody in its stomach, it can't do this again. Right? It's not going to be constantly gooping up people.
I think that's
so good. It's going to be like that one thing that happens. And hopefully, you know, maybe the GM does it at the right time, goops up two PCs, and then you're, oh no. But it, can't do it again. And it's going to have to be relying on its claws and its beaks and its cannon and whatnot for the rest of the PCs.
Which is funny. It's tough and it's level 13. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. All right.
Does this thing have it? Well, before we end, I know you're thinking about ending. Does this thing, do these creatures have a name? What I like to do, I always like to go to Latin names and then.
Well, that's what I was thinking that.
What is it? What is butterball in Latin?
Oh my God. The scientific name for turkey is Meleagris, which is already Meleagris Gallopavo. That's there's something there, right? You can change some of those letters around. You can maybe not. I mean, if I was publishing this for Paizo, I would obviously change some letters around. If I wasn't publishing, if I was doing it for fun, I would probably just call it Meleagris.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's right. That's, when I did some creatures for Ron, that's exactly what it is. I pulled, some Latin names for things and changed it around.
Changed some of the letters around. Yeah.
They had to make sure that there weren't actually things with those names. So,
which is true. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah. So, so then if it's the Meleagris, what's the second word?
Meleagris?
Meleagris. That's just what we call it.
Gallopavo. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, yeah. So the basic one is going to be the Meleagris. And then the higher level one is going to be the.
Well, and a lot of the, I like putting on some sort of qualifier name, the Maliagris Gobbler or the Maliagris, you know, Behemoth or the Maliagris, you know.
Yes. I like, I don't know, Gobbler is a little too silly, but I like it. Behemoth
does that.
Behemoth, because it gobbles you down. Behemoth is always fun.
Juggernaut. No.
I'm sure if I give me another 5 minutes, I would think of something.
Yeah, I want something with alliteration. If we could get another M word in there, but.
Oh, I see. You want to do an. Okay, you're one of those. You love your alliteration.
No, I think that would totally work.
The Meleagris monstrosity.
There's a word.
Muncher. No, I'm being silly. Still. It's gobbler. Muncher.
Maw. Something with maw.
Oh, yeah.
Mauler. Meleagris Mauler.
But it's spelled M-A-W-L-E-R.
Yes.
Also silly.
It is silly.
Isn't Meleagris has a G in it, though? We can kind of flip that, the alliteration. Meleagris Great Maw or something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mammoth Maw. Doesn't feel super mammoth.
Huge, is it?
We might have to workshop this a little bit.
We'll have to workshop this a little bit on out there on the internet.
Or Maliagris Master, if you're thinking it's in control of others.
It's in charge, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Miss something. That's the tricky mega thing with alliteration. You get a little
Mega Maliagris.
Mega Maligar, The trick is if you fall down the alliteration hole, you can't get stuck there. And
I know.
Sometimes you just need to let it go.
For fun, though, I like alliteration.
Yes.
Yeah.
I do like, if I can, because I'm not being helpful with the name, I can at least be a little bit helpful with the lore, right? Instead of being like, you know, the targeted vengeance killing machines that some of the level 7 smaller Meleagris are, that the bigger ones, they just send to like depopulate an area. Like they'll eat anything, right? So they come in there and they're swallowing up, you know, whatever farm animals you've got or pets that people are going through. They're just there to just consume. So
yes. Well, we could call it like Meleagris or something.
What's
or
that?
Nessman's Meleagris.
Nessman's. Oh, sorry. It took me a second.
Yeah.
Maybe that's from the planet. They're from the planet. Wickrip.
Yes. Yes.
Oceans of creamed corn and
Okay. All right. Well, this has been a fun journey down the rabbit hole here for Turkey. And
I think we've done enough damage today. Our work here is done.
Success.
Well, I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason, and this has been Digital Divination.